Today's scripture reading is John 6, 16 through 21. Jesus walks on water. When evening came, his disciples went down to the sea, got into a boat, and started across the sea to Capernaum. It was now dark, and Jesus had not yet come to them. The sea became rough because a strong wind was blowing. When they had rowed about 3 or 4 miles, they saw Jesus walking on the sea and coming near the boat, and they were frightened. But he said to them, "It is I, do not be afraid." Then they were glad to take him into the boat, and immediately the boat was at the land to which they were going. May the Lord add a blessing to the reading and the hearing of his word.
Must have been about 7 or 8, and I remember it quite vividly. It was my birthday, and we were over at a family's friend's home who had a pool. It was a long day of swimming and fun, and at that time I couldn't swim very well. Most of my play was in the shallow end of the pool. But as the night grew on, as the day grew on and the sun went down, we were still all playing in the pool. And this was one of the pools that had a deep end. And around the deep end was an edge that I could walk around without going into the deep end. Well, I decided that I was going to walk around that deep end and play on the edge. And sure enough, I slipped and fell into the deep end. And fear gripped me. I didn't know how to swim. What seemed like hours, which was probably only a few seconds, a cousin jumped in and rescued me and saved me from it. But that happened some 34, 35 years ago. And I remember it as clear as day, vivid. I remember tasting that chlorine. I can see the backyard and the pool extremely clearly. It's vivid. The fear impressed that image, that memory upon my mind. Experts say that our deepest memories are the results of some of the most emotional moments in our lives. In other words, we remember most that which has caused us either immense joy or pain or trauma or even fear. I have found that to be true in my own life. Just this week, I was looking at a picture from high school and trying to recall the events of that picture and could not at all remember taking that picture or what the circumstances around that event was. But I just told you, I was able to remember something as vividly and as clear that happened 35 years ago. This is true. We all have these emotional attachments to our memories. It's true in my life. I'm sure it's true in your life. Well, the disciples had spent 3 years with Jesus. And there is no doubt that in those 3 years, as the Gospels attest, their emotions ran the full gamut. And if the experts are right, that means they had a wealth of memories from which to draw from, experiences that created deep, lasting impressions in their minds and in their memories. Last week, we looked at a memorable meal. It was memorable because of what Jesus was able to accomplish with 2 small fish and 5 loaves of bread. It was memorable because of what Jesus was able to do, but it stuck. It stuck. It became impressed in their minds because of the joy, the emotion of joy and satisfaction it produced that day. This week, we look at a miracle that was not as public as the feeding of the 5,000, but certainly just as powerful and memorable. But this time, it stuck not necessarily because of joy and satisfaction, but it stuck because of the fear and the awe it produced in the disciples. If Jesus' popularity before the feeding of the 5,000 was growing. After that miracle there on the mountainside, his fame grew to an all-time high. So much so that the people began to plan out Jesus' life for him. In their minds, he was a prophet who was sent from God, and they were going to make him king. That's what their intention was. His political power would be just what they needed to overthrow the Roman government so that they can take their rightful ownership of the land. You do see they had high hopes for Jesus. But Jesus, of course, he knew that wasn't the plan. First of all, he was already king. He was born king. He did not need these Galileans to make him king. Nobody except himself possessed the power to make him king. But secondly, the reason why he didn't need anybody to make him king was because his kingdom was not of this world. His was a heavenly kingdom. His reign and his authority encompass more than the political aspirations of those in Galilee had for him. And so, we read this in verse 15 of chapter 6. Perceiving then that they were about to come and take him by force to make him king, Jesus withdrew again to the mountain by himself. He went away, we are told, after feeding the 5,000, we're told by other gospel writers that he went away to pray and spend time with his heavenly Father. But as always, his movements were intentional. Not one second of Jesus' life was unimportant. Not one activity was without significance. And so, like in the past, like we've seen in other accounts in the book of John, Jesus was setting the disciples up. He was setting them up to reveal in an awe-inspiring yet comforting way exactly who he was. As perhaps disciples like those in Galilee who had political aspirations for Jesus, perhaps these disciples had some political aspirations for Jesus of their own. Well, brothers and sisters, context is everything. And so we must realize that this is not simply another account that John tells and gives to us simply to tell us and to relay another miracle that Jesus did so that we are familiar with all the cool stuff that he did. Remember, John told us that there are many miracles Jesus performed that aren't written down. And if that is the case, there is a point to the inclusion of this account. There's a point. The events that happened on the Sea of Galilee, we will explore this morning, cannot be separated from what took place on the mountainside, nor can they be divorced from what took place back in John chapter 5. You do remember what Jesus told the religious leaders back in John chapter 5. He had confirmed what they were perceiving, right? His actions were indeed claiming that he was equal with God. That's what he went through and talked about in John chapter 5. And because he was equal with God, with the Father, he had divine authority and power to work on the Sabbath and to perform the works he had been carrying out up to that point and going forward. Jesus, without mincing words, told them he was the Son of God. And what happened on that mountainside with the feeding of the 5,000 and what we will see happen on the sea is Jesus giving clear signs that he is God the Son. That's what we see him doing in these examples. Example after example, in these signs after sign demonstrating exactly who he is. We dive into the text. After feeding the 5,000 and before heading off to pray, we are told by Matthew and Mark, who also record this account for us, that that Jesus told the disciples that they need to go, get in the boat, travel across the sea to Galilee, and that Jesus, he would meet them on the other side. John, recounting the details, makes what seems like a passing reference regarding the conditions that the disciples were facing that evening. It's almost like a passing reference that we might be quick to overlook, but perhaps we shouldn't overlook it. Look at verses 16 and 17. When Jesus came, his disciples went down to the sea, got into a boat, and started across the Sea of Capernaum. It was now dark, and Jesus had not yet come to them. Now for us, when we hear the sea, we may think of the beach, going to the beach. Or we may think of cruising on the sea, or maybe even going deep sea fishing. But in the ancient world, the sea was not a place of joy, nor was it a place of pleasure. Everyone feared the sea. Why? Because the sea was a place of volatility and the unknown. It was associated with chaos and disorder. Good things did not happen on the sea. You could be sailing along in calm water one minute and then find yourself fighting a raging storm the next. Sound familiar? You see what John is doing here. He's warning to creates a microcosm for us to understand. For in the description of the sea, we have a microcosm of this world. You don't have to be super perceptive to realize the volatile nature of this world. In fact, all you had to be doing was be paying attention for the last year and a half. Things seem to change day to day. Mass one day, no mass the next. Social distance one day, don't social distance the next. Changing day to day. If there is one thing that we can predict, it is that this world is unpredictable. One day things seem to be moving along, and the next day, the world is shut down with a global pandemic. There is peace one day and violence the next. A loved one here today and then gone tomorrow. Sunshine and calm one hour, full out torrential rains the next. I don't know if you're like me, but you find your self-asking when events come up and pop up, you find yourself asking, where in the world did that come from? That came out of the blue. It just seemed like it just come out of nowhere. Like the sea described for us in the Bible, this world is volatile and unpredictable. Oh, but brothers and sisters, can't we also say that about our lives? Isn't that why the stress and the anxiety well up in our hearts regularly? It's the unknown, it's the ups and the downs of life and not knowing what the next day, maybe even the next minute will bring. Oh, I experienced that this week. I had car trouble earlier on in the week. Thank the Lord, it's fixed now. His goodness is running after me, right? But One moment I'm driving and the car is fine. Everything's good. The next minute, it dies. Isn't that just how life is? This world, our lives, like the sea, are volatile and unpredictable. The disciples, they found themselves on the sea. On the sea, John tells us. But not only were they on the sea, John tells us that it was now dark. It was now dark. But there is significance in the reference to the sea. We can't overlook the reference of it being dark. In the Bible, darkness is related to the spiritual condition of the world and is how the hearts of people are described apart from Christ. Ephesians 4:17-18 tells us this. Now, this I say and testify in the Lord, that you must no longer walk as the Gentiles do, those who are outside of Christ. Paul is making the point. In the futility of their minds, they are darkened in their understanding, alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them due to their hardness of heart. This is the spiritual condition of this world. Men and women, because of sin, have had their eyes blinded by the god of this evil age and find themselves walking in darkness. And in fact, those who walk apart from Christ love the darkness and hate the light. That's what we learned back in John chapter 3. These are the conditions of the evening that the disciples find themselves on the sea that John describes for us. They were on the sea, and it was dark, and it was all compounded by John noting that Jesus wasn't there yet. That Jesus wasn't there yet. Volatility, darkness, and Jesus not present. How do you think that was going to work out? Not too well. Not too well. Listen, that which plagues this world is its bondage to sin. And the volatile nature of it and the darkness that grips it makes this life, even for the Christian, difficult, and for the unbeliever, impossible. Impossible. The question has often been asked, with the unpredictable nature of this world and in our lives, how does one make it? How do you survive the volatility and the unpredictable nature of this world and our lives? The answer is, apart from Christ, you don't. You don't make it. You think you are. You think you're making it, but really your circumstances and situations are winning. But you are just a storm away from being exposed. A storm away from being exposed. That's what storms do. They reveal you aren't doing as well as you thought you were doing. The disciples found this out quickly, because while they were on that sea, a storm showed up. A storm showed up. Being obedient followers, the disciples got in the boat, just as Jesus had said, and began to make it across the sea. But it wasn't long before a strong wind began to blow across the water, causing the sea to grow rough and the waves to begin to crash upon the boat. Calm one minute, storm, raging storm the next. These brothers were in an all-out storm. Oh, and brothers and sisters, you do see Jesus had once again set up the disciples for a revelation and a lesson, and the conditions were just right. For in the description of the circumstances surrounding the miracle, we see the condition of the world, but we see God's sovereignty over it. That's what we'll learn this morning. Remember, John tells us that Jesus had not yet come to them. And so when the wind began to blow and the storm raged, the disciples were facing it all alone. And notice what they began to do. Verse 19 tells us that they began to row and row and row, going 3 to 4 miles headlong into the wind and the waves. These brothers were going to town working, trying to make it across the sea. They were going about it themselves, trying to get through the storm, to get to the other side on their own. Oh, the parallel screams at us again. Isn't that what we do? When the storms and the difficulties enter our lives, we begin to go at it ourselves. Yes, yes, even us Christians. We take matters into our own hands and begin to row and row and row as hard as we can in order to try to get through it. When this world and its darkness and volatility make it difficult to navigate, instead of crying out for help, instead of admitting that we are weak, we take matters into our own hands. But the harder we row, the harder we row, the more difficult a time we have. And this was the disciples. They had been rowing for hours and they couldn't get across. They couldn't cut through the wind or the waves. And they were having a difficult time. They must have been having a difficult time because Mark notes that Jesus saw that they were struggling. In Mark's account, in Mark 6:48, he says this, and he, speaking of Jesus, saw that they were making headway painfully, for the wind was against them. They were fighting to make it across the river, and Jesus saw that they were struggling. Oh, brothers and sisters, this is an encouraging word right here. Don't miss it. According to John and his vantage point, Jesus was not there that night. He had yet to come to them, according to John. But through the inspiration of Holy Spirit, Mark tells us Jesus saw them. Jesus saw them. While they were in the storm, in the trial, he knew and saw their struggle. He knew and saw it. Listen, you may think that Jesus is not there and that he has left you to row on your own, to fight your trial, to fight your storm on your own. But believe me, he sees and knows the struggle that you're enduring. He knows how hard you're working. He knows. The disciples were struggling. And Mark tells us Jesus saw their struggle. But you know what? He didn't just see them in the midst of the storm. Jesus showed up. The storm showed up. But Jesus showed up. Jesus showed up while they were rowing in the midst of this storm, right? Working hard. Somebody says, hey, what's that? wait a second. The disciples saw something coming towards them on the water. Both Matthew and Mark say that the disciples thought that it was a ghost coming towards them, and they were terrified. Now let's tell the truth, brothers and sisters. If we were on that boat with the disciples, we would have been just as frightened, right? In the midst of the storm, what's coming towards us? What's that, right? We would have been screaming, ears closed, eyes closed, everything. Just like the disciples, frightened. What in the world is coming towards us? But it wasn't a what. It was a who. It was who is coming towards them. Jesus says, John says, that they saw Jesus walking on the water, coming towards them, and they were terrified. They were afraid. Here is the thing. Perhaps they were frightened. Perhaps they were frightened because at no time during this ordeal, we don't learn of it in Matthew, we don't learn of it in Mark, did the disciples call out for Jesus. They didn't cry out for God. Perhaps they thought that they could handle it themselves. Perhaps they felt like they didn't need Jesus. Whatever they were thinking, they certainly were not looking for Jesus in the midst of this difficulty and this storm. How about you? In your trial, in your storms, are you looking for Jesus, or are you so consumed with the circumstances around you, when he shows up, you're scared. You're frightened. You weren't expecting him. But here's the deal. Despite our faithlessness, despite the disciples' faithfulness, here is the glorious part. Even though they weren't looking for Jesus, even though they hadn't called out to him in the midst of this storm, Jesus showed up anyway. He showed up anyway. And he didn't just show up in another boat to rescue them and come to their aid. He didn't show up with the Coast Guard to tow them back to shore. Jesus showed up walking on the sea. Walking on the sea. Jesus came walking on the sea. Do you understand? Before he even said a word, he was already declaring his deity. Who is able to walk on the water? God alone. The disciples may have not realized it at the moment, but there is no doubt it became clear later. Jesus was declaring his authority over the sea. Job begins to pontificate on the Lord and who he is in Job 9. And he asks a question: if one wished to contend with him, speaking of Yahweh, one could not answer him once in a thousand times. He is wise in heart and mighty in strength. Who has hardened himself against him and succeeded? And Job later on then goes on to say in verse 7 of chapter 9, speaking of God, who commands the sun and it does not rise, who seals up the stars, who alone stretched out the heavens and trampled the waves of the sea. Only God can walk upon the sea. When Jesus came walking on that water through that storm, he was declaring he is sovereign over creation. And if he was sovereign over creation, then he wasn't creature, he was creator. He had the authority and the power to walk on the water, because the wind and the sea were no match for the Son of God. And if that wasn't enough, Jesus then spoke to them. He spoke to them. And he says in verse 20, It is I. Do not be afraid. Now in the Greek, the phrase, it is I, shows up and reads, ego eimi. That's the Greek word there, ego eimi, which translated means, I am. Now, because I know you to be good Bible students, your mind is probably traveling back to Exodus and Moses, where God called Moses to go to Egypt, to the Hebrew people, and tell them that he was going to rescue them from their bondage to the Egyptians. And Moses, being overwhelmed and scared and unsure, says to Yahweh, "When they ask me who sent me, who shall I tell them?" And Yahweh responds, "Tell them, I am sent you." The great I am. Yahweh was going to rescue them from Egypt. He was going to fight for them. He was their God and they were his people. Tell them, I am sent you. In the midst of the storm, walking on the sea, Jesus announces himself to disciples, I am. Fear not. Do not be afraid. God Almighty is here. You need not be afraid. Oh, this was the revelation and the lesson that Jesus was teaching his disciples, and he is teaching us. Yes. Yes, the world in which they were living and our world and their lives would be full of volatility and darkness, but they need not be afraid. They need not have to fight the storm on their own. The great I am who walks on the sea, he is the one who controls the winds and the waves and the storms in your life. He is the light in the midst of darkness. Brothers and sisters, you need not be afraid. I hope you're listening this morning. We all have storms that we're trying to fight on our own. But you need to understand there is no wave too big or wind too strong that Jesus is not able to walk through and meet you in your distress. In your struggle, he sees and he comes walking on top of whatever situation you are in and says, I am. Fear not. Fear not. Do not be afraid. Oh, this is the promise, isn't it? Jesus says, we'll learn this later when we come to John 16 and 20. He says, John 16 and 33, I have said these things to you that in me you may have peace. In the world you will have tribulation, but take heart, I have overcome the world. Powerful. Listen, he has not promised that there won't be storms. He hasn't promised that there won't be trials. But he has promised to be there with you, to meet you there. He sees you, to walk with you through that trial and that storm. The question is, will you welcome him when he shows up? Upon Jesus proclaiming to these disciples who he was, listen to what the disciples did in verse 21. Then they were glad to take him into the boat. And immediately the boat was at the land to which they were going. They were glad to welcome him onto the boat, John says. Was there any other response? Jesus had just walked on the water to meet them in the storm and revealed his deity. You better believe they welcomed him gladly. Will you, brothers and sisters? The other gospel writers tell us that when Jesus got on the boat, the winds and the waves ceased. They ceased. And John records that immediately they were on the other side, safely at their destination. Another miracle there. They still had a ways to go, right? They had only been rowing 4 to 5 miles. There were still some miles to go. But when Jesus shows up, they welcome him on the boat. Immediately they are at their destination. Oh, this is the promise of Jesus. He promises to get you safely home. He promises to get you safely home. Not without troubles, not free from storms, but he who walks upon the sea promises to meet you and guide you safely home. That is the language. That is the language of the psalmist in Psalm 107, 29, and 30. He made the storm be still, and the waves of the sea were hushed. And then they were glad that the waters were quiet, and he brought them to their desired haven. Jesus, God the Son, walks upon the sea. Brothers and sisters, there is no trial. There is no storm that he can't calm. None. Whatever you're struggling with, whatever issue, there is no storm that he can't calm, that he can't meet you. The question is, do you believe that? Do you believe that? Then welcome him into your boat and trust that he will get you to where you need to be. Jesus came walking.